Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, welcome again to Spirit of Nigeria Radio's broadcast on Nigerians in Diaspora and their voice in the nation. Of course, we know that there are so many Nigerians scattered all over the world, and we are asking today whether they should really have a voice in what is happening in the nation. Should they have a voice in politics, governance, and nation building? Given the backdrop of Mr. Deputy Speaker saying that Nigerians in the diaspora do not have any right to complain about what is happening in the nation sometime last week. And to have that discussion or conversation with me right now is Mr. B.C. Ogunwode, ex-Law Society accredited senior caseworker and advocate in immigration and asylum. Currently, he's based in the UK. Good day, sir. How are you?
I'm very fine, sir. How are you?
Okay, fine, thank you. So let the conversation begin. I gave the background to this, and I'm sure you will have heard of it or seen the video. What do you make of it?
The gentleman in question, I don't seem to understand it, the rationale behind his saying what he said, because even if you're in the diaspora, as a lot of us are, as they say, well, abroad and things like that, the thing is, we have family in Nigeria. That's the first thing. We're not totally disengaged from Nigeria. And obviously, we want to know, we'd like to know what's happening to our family, whether they're safe or not, our various families or members of our various families, whether they're safe or not, and other things. We send a lot of money home, to different members of our families. I've got my mother worked here for a long while. Now she's back in Nigeria. She's retired and she's in Nigeria. Do you understand? So, and we keep in contact and we ask about the safety and things. So it's normal to ask about the safety of your family. It's an African thing. You understand?
Okay.
It's not like, yeah?
Yeah, I was going to say that in the meantime, the crew of the deputy speaker has brought out a point which says that, look, I wasn't talking about their right. I was saying that the group or the organization that is making or that forwarded the petition is not registered in Nigeria, and therefore I cannot, attend to this petition. I cannot take it into consideration. From a lawyer's point of view, does it make sense?
What doesn't make sense is the fact that if you're not going to address an issue or you're not going to address a point from someone that you don't recognize, then why raise the debate of that person in the first place? You understand? The issue is you've actually taken it on. So it's either you address it or you don't. Now that you've taken it on, you'd have to now go fully and address it properly. You can't say someone doesn't or a group doesn't have a, even if they're not registered in Nigeria, they're Nigerian. Okay, from what we understand now, the federal government said that if you have dual nationality, you can come into Nigeria without a passport and get a visa at the port of entry. You understand? Which means that even if you don't even have a Nigerian passport, you're still recognized as a Nigerian. Why would you do that and then say things that you're saying now? That's the confusing part of it. And also the fact is, they're saying things like, oh, Nigerians abroad should not talk about, or well, one specific person or group should not talk about what's happening in Nigeria. But the government, the senators, or whatever, the House of Reps people, are they talking about people that are suffering here in the UK or in the States or somewhere? Because for a fact, we know that there's a lady that was killed last year here in England, and nobody from Nigeria talks about it. There's a lady, I don't know the full facts, but I know that, but there's a lady that was jailed in Cote d'Ivoire like last week. And nobody's talking about all that. Why? They don't care about their citizens over here in the diaspora, but they care about what they say. I find that very, very funny.
Also, let me add that, this petition was brought by a representative from the zone, which the petitioners represented, and that for me, even gives it some more legitimacy. Anyway, you were going to say something.
Yeah, that's another thing. Look, Why? I don't know. I think we are living, as the Yoruba people say, we are living leprosy and treating ringworm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
There are many, many things that are wrong or not going right, per se.
Mm-hmm.
People talking about insecurity is not a sin. It's happening in Nigeria. People are getting kidnapped, right, regularly. Farms are being raided. I'm not even talking about whether it's from one region of the country or the other, or like some people are doing it, or one ethnic group is being accused of it. I'm not talking about, the fact is that Nigeria practically right now is insecure. We get reports from different governmental agencies here saying that if you want to travel to Nigeria, these are places that you can't go to. Why will Oyibo be telling us where we can't go to? Do you understand? Because they know that it's not safe. Nigeria itself are not telling us, the Nigerian government is not telling us, look, if you are coming to Nigeria, when you are traveling out of Lagos, make sure that you're safer.
Mm.
Do you understand? Or if there's no necessary need for you to travel outside Lagos, don't go. If you are coming to Nigeria now and you want to come and invest, don't invest in farming yet, though, because the farms are not safe. You know, things, they're not telling us things like that. We're not relying on foreigners per se when it comes to Nigeria telling us what to do when we get to Nigeria, our own country.
All right, okay, so but let's look at this insecurity issue, you know, from a global perspective. Yeah. Nigeria's never had it so bad. Sometimes I think we're in a state of war, sometimes I think that war is looming, and even on the Lagos Ibadan expressway that I apply regularly, you know, it doesn't seem to be safe anymore. I've seen one or two incidents. I've also escaped one, you know, by whiskers. And up north, they're kidnapping school children. They are raiding villages. And we didn't grow up in that environment. Now, does this sound like the Nigeria which you know?
Thank you. No, it doesn't. I actually lived in Nigeria up to 2017. Do you understand? I came back from the UK and I started living in Nigeria. And up to, well, if not for some one thing or the other, I'd still be living in Nigeria. But it's not been as bad as it is now. Yeah? Now, but what Nigerians first need to do, a lot of us, especially the elites or the intellectual set of Nigerians, we need to stop this thing of either politicizing or blaming one side or the other. No, this thing is not an ethnic thing. It is not. Yeah, obviously, the things like the Fulani herdsmen coming into farms. But we should know, at least, I don't know about you, but I grew up in Ibadan, and I know for a fact that when we saw Fulani herdsmen back in the day, the most dangerous of his weapons was a bow and arrow.
Correct.
Yeah, or maybe a dagger. Yeah, most of them didn't even have that. Maybe that was the leader of the herdsmen. Most of them had what we call the round knobbed stick called a kanda.
Yes.
That was used to hit the cow so that they didn't walk out of way or something. Now we're hearing that they have AK-47s, that they have different kinds of weapons of destruction, as they say, and that they kill at will, whenever they want. You understand? Now, what should be looked at is the fact that there's an odd kind of trend there. And obviously, even before this Fulani thing, kidnapping was an industry in Nigeria, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
It was a thriving industry. Yeah, well, so I'm saying, take out the ethnic part of it. Whoever's committed the crime is a criminal. It doesn't matter from where that person is from. Now, that's the first thing. Now, address the issue of what is really happening when it comes to our security forces. Why are the police not protecting us properly? Why is it that SARS is going after Yahoo boys, are not going after Fulani herdsmen in the bush? Are they not criminals or going after kidnappers everywhere? It's not that the police don't know what's happening. Do you understand? We do, in all honest, we don't need to bring soldiers into this kind of situations. So whether it's going to be state policing, or whether it's going to be police being sent back to their states of origin, or whether it's just going to be communal policing, things have to be better. They have to be done better. It's all about, well, as I was telling a lady who's a South African, a friend of mine, it's all, when it comes to Africa, it's all about impoverishment. Our minds are our thinking is poverty based.
Yeah.
You understand? We always think about the next hour or the next few hours. We don't think about, because of the way things are, we can't think about 5 years down the line. We can't plan. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And because there's that in place, there's always a constant hustle. And people are thinking about what they're going to eat in the afternoon when they wake up in the morning, and thinking about what they're going to eat for breakfast. Do you understand? Some people go to sleep thinking about what they're going to eat the next day. There's nothing like, oh, what am I going to eat in 5 years time? Or what am I going to be doing in 5 years time? Or things like that. So all that is combining to put this horrible thing in place where everywhere is insecure. Do you understand? This is not a governmental thing, Aru. Trust me, it's not. It's not just, we can't blame the government alone. We have to blame ourselves as well. Do you understand? Because back in the day, when I was growing up, we were our neighbor's keepers. Do you understand?
Yeah.
But now we have fences where If somebody is even stealing, is robbing another man, you won't know because the fence is so high, you don't even can't see what's inside, what's happening inside the house.
Correct.
You know, so the insecurity is a problem, a massive one. In fact, it's more than a problem, it's a disease. Well, this insecurity didn't start like 5 or 6 years ago or 7 years ago. The militants were when they were doing their thing, it was criminal. Yeah, they were fighting. They claimed they were fighting for something, but it was criminal. They were kidnapping at the time. Even before then, there was all this ritualist going on and things like that. So insecurity has been the bane of a society for quite a while. It's just got very, very bad now. And I still believe that when it comes to all this Fulani thing, I have a fear that Boko Haram or ISIS are coming down south. That's my fear.
Yeah. Well, your fear is genuine, because right now kidnapping is becoming, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 times what it used to be some weeks back. Tertiary institution students are being kidnapped. You know, they were released yesterday. Another set kidnapped today again. You know, and it's one big business, like you said. I don't know how we're going to solve that problem, but I think that we need a different mindset to be able to tackle it. I believe with technology, a few things are possible. I don't know where they'll be carrying 300 students, you know, marching them down the forest and all of that without us being able to locate where they are. And this is where I would like to throw the challenge to Nigerians in diaspora. What do you think Nigerians in diaspora should be doing as a pressure group at this point in time? Forget about whether the deputy speaker is saying you have a voice or not. We all agree that you do have a voice. So, and it can also be orchestrated without going to the House of Representatives, if that's the case. But what should Nigerians in diaspora, in a more formal and structured way, you know, for that inclusion in what is happening in Nigeria, what should you guys be doing?
You see, that's a difficult question to answer. You know, Here in the diaspora, whatever they call it, abroad, the thing is, we're in a driven society. We live in driven societies. Do you understand? It's not that there's no time to do these things, but a lot of people just want to hear good things about Nigeria rather than the bad things. And there are a lot of good things happening. People just don't know. Yeah? But to address your question, people, they think they're powerless. They believe they're powerless. If you form something in, if you form something in the States or in the UK or in Germany or in Australia or something, as the deputy speaker said, even if you, well, if you register it in Nigeria, yeah, you're like what, a pressure group or something, register in Nigeria, they still won't think about you. Because I've experienced it on different forums. They say, ah, because you live in the UK, you're just talking anywhere, why don't you come and live in Nigeria? Do you understand? Because the major thing is, when it comes to things like this, the abroad Nigerian sometimes thinks in a superior way, as they say. I'm not saying, it's as if he has a superiority complex.
Hmm.
And then the home Nigerian is saying, but we are the same. It's just shame is because you left something. Anyways, you don't even know what's happening here. Until you live there, you won't know what's happening. So that thing is, as well, is a problem. Look at this. There was this thing last year, that thing that happened with the youth, NSAS.
Yes.
Yeah? It happened in Nigeria. The most vocal people were here in the UK. Now, some were saying, okay, there was an alleged massacre in Lekki on the toll bridge, yeah? Some people here were, their heads were nearly bitten off because they asked certain questions. Okay, what really happened and things like that? Nobody knows up to today. But because you're abroad, they'll say, people were accused of being government, they were backing the government because they just wanted to know, was it really true, or was it to an extent where you could call it a massacre, or was it, and you know, things like that. So
that's why I like the way you put it, alleged massacre.
Yeah. You know, so the thing is, even if people want to do things here or they want to form a pressure group here, it will come to a time where people will be saying, if you want to talk about Nigeria, why don't you come home?
Mm.
Do you understand? Mm.
Yeah.
But a lot of people would want, and then it's pretty non-honesty. Well, I don't know about a lot of people, but in my honest opinion, it's an exercise in futility because nobody's listening to anybody anyways.
So are we going to continue like this?
No. It's not going to continue like this. The only thing is, I have strong belief that Nigeria is going to be very, very good very soon. They're going to be, people are saying restructuring and things. I don't know about all that restructuring because the bane of the society is insecurity, corruption, and lack. Well, with me, it goes beyond those two. It also includes a lack of electricity, a lack of water, and a lack of
infrastructure.
Infrastructure passing. Do you understand? Now, essentially, if you restructure, are you going to be saying that somebody in Yoruba land will now stand up and develop Yoruba land all of a sudden, like a Western region? Or are you saying someone in the East is going to stand up all of a sudden and do that? Because we've seen these leaders from the various sides of Nigeria, in the Senate and in the House of Reps now. These are going to be the leaders that are going to be leading the restructured places now. And we have, I'm not seeing anything that's coming out of those. Jonathan?
Wow. I do.
So okay, Aru, look at this. A governor gets into power. That's a young governor gets into power. But because of the fact that the way he got into power was shrouded in so much corruption and things, or maybe because the funding wasn't like as in the US or in the UK where your campaign is funded, you have to like let the government know how it was funded. Mm-hmm. He's owing a lot of people favors, financial favors, this and that. First 2 or 3 years of his government, if he's very wise, he gets those people off his back. He used 1 year to do governmental things, and then he's campaigning for the second term. Now, the second term, what he's trying to do is gather his own money as well, because that is the natural thing. Nobody's working. No, there's nothing like public service in Nigeria right now. So that is where and nobody's been trained for it. I remember when I was a kid, a friend of mine, his father, a lot of their fathers were what they call them, civil servants, in the big yesterday when he was still, a lot of them were civil servants, career level civil servants, permanent secretaries. When we were in secondary school, I went to GCI, when we were in secondary school, a lot of them, their fathers were like permanent secretaries in the Ministry of Education, Ministry of that, you know that, you understand? And they had this kind of modus operandi, where the people were, they weren't corrupt. And they were public servants to the core. I know for a fact that your dad was a commissioner of for information. You understand? I know your brother well, very well. So I know the kind of, I can feel the kind of setting where you grew up as well. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, high integrity.
Career public servants, the career public servants that didn't feel the need to steal. There was no need. Opportunity was there to steal, but there was no need for it. But now, you see, someone that's on level 8 has like 3 kids here in the UK. Yeah. The kids are living in a flat in Swiss Cottage. They're not living in East London, they're living in Swiss Cottage. The woman is paying from Nigeria. You understand? Now they now block the whole thing, and then the kids can't go to school anymore.
Wow. All right, but that, doesn't that take us to the issue of the role of the law, equity, justice in Nigeria from a lawyer's point of view? Shouldn't we be talking about a Nigeria, a nation of consequences? I think the larger percentage of these things happen because, I'm not saying there are no corrupt people, no crime in other countries or in other climes, but certainly because Nigeria is not a nation of consequences. From the driver on the street who is going one way, to the man that embezzles billions or trillions of, naira, how do we, revitalize, reconfigure, rejig our law and justice system that would ensure that people who earn are punished?
Firstly, there are things that we should take out of our judicial system. You see, delays. Mm-hmm. Legal delays. They're everywhere. Yeah, but when it comes to things like corruption, when it comes to things like kidnapping, murder, and whatever, there's a hasten process here, which is not in Nigeria. And it's all because of the fact that maybe someone has money and this person has said, look, let me get like some 15 or 20 different, a battery of lawyers to go defend me. And then they come up with one something or the other that says this or that, and that then the court has to adjourn and go and think about that one. Then they come up with another thing entirely. So the process is flawed. And one icon I know that said this thing is fell out. The thing is, you can't be following Igbo man to do everything. Sorry, I'm pardon my pigeon, but you can't be, you can't be following the Igbo man. We are not Mr. Follow. We should not be Mr. Follow anymore. And that's what's killing us.
And even if you follow, you go open eye.
Do you understand? Now, the thing is, when it comes to the judicial system, it's slow because we have not reformed it over time.
Yeah.
It's like with everything in Nigeria. What was working in the 60s is too slow to work in the 90s, and it's far, far too slow to work in the 21st century. Yeah, that's one thing. Now, the second thing is, we should actually sort of extricate crimes that are federal from crimes that are like that can be treated by the state. Yeah.
Right.
So if it's kidnapping, it just goes. Your process is going straight from to judge whether you can go to court. Then from there, you are going to a major court. That's it. Don't be saying we have this thing that we want to present to the court today. What if you don't present your papers once, then forget about it. Then there's also in the penal code of Nigeria, I don't even think there are things where that need to be changed and changed to meet the crimes that are happening now. Do you understand? I know that if you're corrupt and they catch you stealing money, the the penalty is not heavy. Mm. In some cases, it's like 3 months and a fine. Do you understand?
Yeah, you have stolen.
And this person has stolen like billions of naira. It's like 3 months and a fine commensurate to what he stole. So you might, even when it comes to that fine, you might not even be taking most of the money that he stole. It's only confiscation orders by EFCC and things that are now trying to get the money back. EFCC, to me, is even extrajudicial, in all honesty. It should be under the police force. But the police force itself is corrupt. Do you understand?
Wow.
So, because if you have, like in the States, they have FBI. In the UK here, we have serious and organized crime, something. It's under the police. But you know that if Soka comes, they call them Soka. If Soka comes to bust somebody, that guy is in serious trouble.
But the police is part of Nigeria. Nigeria is a corrupt nation. They can't be any different, can they?
Yeah, but is the EFCC any different?
No, I mean, it's that's exactly the point I'm making. I don't want it to sound like it's just the police. Everybody is.
Yeah.
Everybody
now, you see, when it comes to the everyday man, unfortunately, we have to put human rights aside. I'm not a fan of it, but
okay.
Nigerians have to be. They have to understand that for every sin, there's a consequence. If your driving offense should not be a fine in Nigeria, especially if it's an intentional driving offense where you're driving on the curb because there's go slow, that guy should be jailed. I'm telling you,
our jails will be full.
He does. You don't understand. There should be traffic jail. You just be traffic jail. That traffic jail, you go and cut grass and things like that. You are smoking. You understand?
Oh my God! No, but sometimes you know, maybe that's why some people can't live abroad. I have friends who tell me, "Look, I cannot." You know, in Nigeria, you can drink and drive. Nobody's going to, you know.
There's no harm in use
any breathalyzer. You even probably meet the policeman on the way and you say, oh, see, Alpha, you say, wait till you drink, remain. And the man just...
and he collect alcohol in uniform. You understand? You see this drink and everything that you're talking about? There are places... Yeah. The man that will carry you from motor park in Odota, you know how much checkway has taken in the morning?
Yeah.
To shine eye before we say that one will allow him to see the road properly or see clearly when he's driving. You know, so we are a country of lawbreakers. If you don't know the consequences of your actions, you won't know that you committed a crime.
That's correct.
But if they tell you that, look, if you drink drive, you can kill people, one, and then two, it's a crime, maybe people will change. But we're not even informed. Information is key.
Correct.
Do you understand? And that's, maybe if you're informed that if you steal, you will die. If you still got my money, they'll kill you. Maybe people will understand. But because of the fact that we're a nation where the consequences are barbarian, because one guy will just steal money and start dropping for some people in town. You understand? Before you know it, the guy is barbarian. And after a while, he just contests for council or from there to chairman and things. That's how it starts. So his corrupted mind is focused on stealing because he believes that's the way to go. And of course, there's also that issue of saying everybody does it. Okay? Why can't I?
Yeah. Okay, so now let me ask you something personal. Do you belong to any Nigerian associations, for example, in the UK, where you guys sit down and talk about, you know, how to move the Nigerian forward?
I belong to my old boys association, and we tend to, from our perspective, want to improve, you know, improve some kind of things in our own kind of way, you know, like where you have what Nigerians, a lot of them elites, you think about is their niches, where their niche, you know, where they have their own circle of influence. Try and improve that first before we try and improve that. We have to start small. People fail to understand that Nigeria is broken. If we're going to repair it, it will take time. It won't take a miracle worker 2 years or 3 years.
it'll take at least 20 years to improve this country. You understand?
Yes.
Hello? So if that's
the case, I can hear you.
So if that's the case, why don't we start small in your own local government, in your own street, on your own street, you know? Let's enlighten ourselves that thing. You see, we had this we had some programs that were good. MAMSA and things that were reminding people of social values. Maybe they should bring them back, but on lower levels, so that the people on the street can understand what they're talking about. It's not like the government is spouting rubbish. They're just saying that these things are what we had in the past, what we need to get back to. Our morals need to be, we need to get back to a more moralistic kind of society. There's nobody better than Nigeria, in my own opinion. There's nobody better than Nigeria or any Nigerian. Nigerians are changing.
Things are warped right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you very much.
No worries.
All right. Thanks a lot, my brother. Don't worry. We'll go back to the days of war against indiscipline. MAMSA. I remember in those days they used to do some, Kai Daniel, you know, all kinds of things, preaching, you know, moral values, Amro Banobi spirit, you know. So there's a lot of work for the media too, for us in terms of reshaping the values of our dear nation.
Yeah, you understand. And I don't know. I've never given up hope. I've never given up hope on Nigeria. I believe in that entity. Yeah, it's a conglomeration of different units, different ideas, cultures, and things. But that's what makes our country rich. The diversity. Mm-hmm. It's not the diversity of culture, of opinion, and everything. You see, there's a professor in Yoruba land. There's another professor in East. There's another professor in Hausa land. There's another professor in Nupe and everything. We have what it takes to make us great. We're just looking at the wrong side of things. That's it. If we can get on the right path, we get back to where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, I believe in you and I trust you. I like, you know, what you've said today, and I think that's a safe place to put it down today on our conversation on Nigerians in Diaspora and the Voice in the Nation. We've been speaking with Mr. Adebisi Ugode. All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
I'm sure any other time you'd oblige us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, actually. Thank you very much. And it's what you're doing is good, though. Please continue.
Thank you. No problem. No problem. We'll continue. All right. It's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and transmission continues on keeping Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, positive Nigerian narratives, positive vibes, strictly Nigerian music. Keep on enjoying it.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.